I wanted to talk about mainly on this meditation challenge, at least on these three mornings that I'm going to be leading, is about the context of meditation. In fact, I'm going to be talking about that much more than meditation itself. We will be doing meditation, and I will teach a bit of it. But, you know, every morning you'll be coming along, every lunchtime if you want to, every evening. There'll be lots of meditation teaching. I've been more and more concerned to teach context, because increasingly in our kind of postmodern world, things are being taken out of context and assumed you can do that without changing its meaning. Yeah? And that's happening in all sorts of ways, and it's also happening to Buddhism, and it has done for many, many years. And there are values in that, but there are definite shortcomings in that. And I tend to be the kind of guy who's focused on the shortcomings of that. So we'll be hearing a lot about that, I'm afraid. the main thing I want to stress in this 3 weeks, at this three mornings, is that the context, by which I mean, all sounds a bit posh and a bit mad for a Saturday morning before 11 o'clock and I haven't even had a cup of coffee yet. But really what I mean is the metaphysical context. Yeah? I don't mean your life context, I don't particularly mean the modern context. I mean the metaphysical context. The difficulty with this, as soon as you try and teach it, is that the assumption is that we haven't got one now. Yeah? I'm just living in a sort of thoroughly factual world. I'm not living on the basis of a metaphysical context. But actually I am, and you are. And that context is very, very problematic. Yeah, the modern, even postmodern metaphysical context, which we're all living out, as it were. We're not aware of it, usually. We're not subconscious about it. We don't decide to live in a particular postmodern context, but we sort of live it out without knowing it. We're taught it and so on. That context, I think, is increasingly unhealthy and will restrict human growth, yeah, and is restricting human growth. For some reason, I keep going back to Nietzsche in 1853, I think, he said, belief in God has become unbelievable. Yeah. So what he meant is, you just can't do it anymore. It's like an old-fashioned way of saying stuff that nobody can believe anymore. Yeah. He didn't think that was a good thing. He just said that was just the case, that the metaphor had died. Yeah. And since the death of God, we've never managed to replace that. Yeah. And it's not been a massive success, I'm afraid. I mean, it's had its great successes because it's released us from all kinds of religious abuses and tyrannies and so on. But it's not been a total success. So what happened at the death of God was the death of a whole metaphysical context that you believed in naturally and without thinking about it. Because remember, context isn't something you think about or live out, you just live through context. But that context, if we transported ourselves 200 years ago, we would, or not even as much as that, and certainly it's still true for most of the world, that context would have been that my place in life is to open to God or worship God. My place in life is to be closer to God. Yeah? You wouldn't have thought that was your metaphysical context. You would have just thought that was how things actually are, that the natural world was the face of God, whether you were virtuous or not, weighed in your life after death, as it were. That would have been just taken for granted. Just as you take your metaphysics now for granted, early Victorians would have taken theirs for granted. And most of the world, remember, still believes in God. And the vast majority of the world believe in God. So what has happened in the modern world is that we lost God. We lost a kind of transcendental metaphysical context. In other words, we lost something to serve and devote ourselves to. And we ended up serving ourselves. Yeah? We effectively turned ourselves into God. None of this I was meaning to say. but we've effectively turned ourselves into God. I think Jung said we've become our own church. Carl Jung said, we have fallen off the roof of the medieval cathedral into the abyss of self, which is a brilliant way of putting it. You couldn't put our modern situation better. We have fallen off the roof of the medieval cathedral into the abyss of self. In other words, we've tried to make ourselves, our needs, our wants, our desires, our identities, our politics, etc., etc. We try to make those our church. We try to make those things that we worship. There's actually been benefits in that, but you're now seeing, particularly in Gen Z, apparently Gen Z is now the most unhealthy generation to ever be on record, at least. Very, 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 particularly mentally unhealthy. So what I wanted to do is try to teach you something about the Buddhist context, which, remember, is traditionally you wouldn't have, I don't know how to put this, but you wouldn't have been thinking about it. I was trying to talk about this to a friend just now, just yesterday, and I was saying, here we are walking down the road. Actually, there's a metaphysical context for that, but you don't think about it, you're just walking down the road. It's just fact as far as you're concerned, yeah? So I want to say a bit about the Buddhist context, and I want to say a little bit about our context, and then we'll meditate again. Actually, let's start with our context. So what we've got as our metaphysical context is this basic belief in materialism, in physicalism, that the world, everything important in life, is basically reducible to materials. Yeah. So my metaphor for this, I think our context, when we sit to meditate, without meaning to, it's like teaching people in a multi-story car park. That's my current analogy, and it might run out. But anyway, when I come and teach meditation now, from this point of view, it's like teaching people to meditate in a multi-story car park. So what you've got in a multi-story car park is basically a brutalist world, a brutally physical world, which is designed for private luxury and creates public squalor. Yeah? So the multi-story carpet is all based so that we can go to Morrison's rather than Marks and Spencer's, and we can drive into town and put our shopping in the back. Yeah, everyone is doing that. It's not, no one's being blamed here. But you see how that context is material and materialistic in this metaphysical sense. It's to do with what I need and value and what's good for me rather than what's good for us. Interestingly, I think as a metaphor it's good because it's also noisy and polluted, like our world increasingly is. It's completely divorced from the natural world, which is like our contemporary world is. We're the first generations to live so out of contact with the natural world. That's again one of the things that's happened in modernity, is we've moved away from nature, and we're moving further and further away from nature because we're stuck on our screens. So even though we're in the city, or in heaven forbid, Westfield, you could be on your phone in Westfield. That's a long way away from the natural world. It's hard to know how you could get much further. And then you've got your meditation app that you're listening to on your phone in Westfield, which has got birdsong playing in the background. That's our contemporary situation, isn't it? It is quite nuts. But it does mean that we can get to, Morrison's and Safeway and do some clothes shopping. So it's got definite pros, yeah. And central to our current place, metaphysical place, as it were, in this multi-story car park. We see what I'm using that metaphor for. I will warm up eventually. I don't know what's wrong with me today. My machinery is not working very well. Anyway, I'm particularly saying that metaphor for is we're basically just saying, okay, that's what the world's like, noisy, polluted, brutalist, separate from nature, with no sense of community, arranged around private luxury and creating public squalor, material only made in material, with nothing to worship. Only thing we can worship is consumer goods. That is the context we've created. That's our metaphysical context. And then Buddhism comes along and says, why don't we just relax into that? That'd be nice. Let's just chill out, you know. Chill the hell out. You know, we can all just sit in this multi-story car park of the modern life and see if we can do something. You know, take a few deep breaths. My, doesn't that make a difference? Yeah. And that is a parody of it, but that is literally what is being taught. You know, that we'll just relax. This is what sort of people like Zizek are saying, that, you know, Buddhism is just about, you know, the world is just a multi-story car park, but I'm going to just watch my breath, and then everything's kind of fine, doesn't really matter. Yeah. And then I can go to Morrison's and I can go to Safeways, but I'll be doing it like this really chilled out way. This kind of Buddha shopping kind of thing. And that is that's where we've kind of created. So when you teach meditation, if you're not careful, you're just saying to people, just chill out. I know it's noisy, polluted, I know it's squalor, I know it's brutalist and materialist, I know you think that in the end of life you're just going to be completely destroyed along with all other material, because you think of yourself in terms of material, but hey, let's just relax about it. Yeah. That is largely how Buddhism is being interpreted in the modern world. At least that's what I think. And I'm up front at the moment, so I get to say I get to say what I think. So that is the situation we're in. So what I want to particularly stress is reimagining a new context. First of all, I think we need to be much clearer that we are in that kind of metaphysical context, and it's not working for us. It's had its definite gains. It's had gains in science, it's had gains in technology, it's had gains in reason, because of course one of the great dangers of religion is it becomes irrational and illiberal. Actually, there are political streams at the moment that are also irrational and illiberal. If you're not careful, we'll go back to religion through another doorway. So it was good to get away from that religious world. Nietzsche was right. Belief in God has become unbelievable. But this idea that we can then just serve ourselves in this kind of context of the multi-story car park really isn't working. We're having an epidemic of mental health problems, yeah, across the board, particularly in Gen Z. So I want to try and talk about what a Buddhist assumption would be. Yeah? And problem with this is that those traditional Buddhists in Tibet or India or China or Japan, wherever they were, in Burma, they would have been brought up in this context, in the Buddhist context, which they would have taken for granted, just as we take our metaphysical context for granted. So for instance, we really think that this human life we've got, which is incredibly short, you are destroyed at the end of it. We really believe that. We don't know that we've believed it. We don't know that we've taken on ideas from the culture around us. But we really believe that. Not only do we really believe that, but we act as if that is the case. So, you know, when my mother died 2 years ago, just about today almost, just around this time, you know, the instinct of my family was we need to help her live as long as possible, even though she was suffering a lot. Because life is the only thing you've got. And all you can do is prolong it, sometimes against real pain. Yeah? That would be utterly weird to a traditional Buddhist. They just think, oh no, life isn't like that at all. You're not obliterated at death. What you've done in your life, your actions for good or bad, will have real effects, and they will carry on in some mysterious way into the future, into future lives even. So our belief in material, that we're a material creature, we believe that consciousness is an epiphenomena of the brain. In other words, we believe that this being in the world can be reduced to to sort of neural messages in the brain, as if that's really what's going on. Actually, I'm not really seeing you, this is all just happening in my brain. You're not really experiencing the warmth of this room, it's just to do with your your wiring. It's all happening in your brain, and when your brain is destroyed, you're destroyed. That's our given assumption. We think it's a fact, and it's a belief. It's a metaphysical context, yeah. and it's one completely alien to Buddhism. So I'm going to focus on this one verse from the Sevenfold Puja, which is a religious text coming down, I think it's 6th or 7th century, from a great Buddhist teacher. And one of the verses says, "This very day I go for my refuge to the powerful protectors whose purpose is to guard the universe." Yeah. So I'm probably going to base all of these three things just on that first sentence of it. "This very day I go for my refuge to the powerful protectors whose purpose is to guard the universe." Now, mostly today I want to talk about this very day, but we'll do that in a minute. I want to start at the end of that, because I've sort of gone this way, which is not the way I meant to go, but anyway. Which is, "This very day I go for my refuge," and we'll be exploring what that means, "I go for my refuge to the powerful protectors," and we'll explore what that means if we can, "whose purpose is to guard the universe." Last summer I was on a solitary retreat for a month, and I found myself just repeating this line in meditation when I was walking around. "This very day I go for my refuge to the powerful protectors whose purpose is to guard the universe." Yeah. So just for now I want to sort of evoke a bit about guarding the universe. Yeah. We couldn't, in that statement, you couldn't be further away from our contemporary metaphysics, which is that the universe is unguarded, and that there is a radical, if not complete, split between me and you, between me and the world, between me sitting down and watching my breath and this multi-storey car park we've built around us. We think that the world and myself are radically distinct. In fact, in modern life, we seem to be wanting to say that we're radically distinct from each other as well. You know, I'm a white, gay, middle class, no, not, I'm sort of working class-ish, come from the country, 63-year-old, and that's different from a black, you know, etc. If we're not careful, we'll get more and more saying, "Well, I'm completely different from you, and you're completely different from me." And there's understandable reasons for that. But that's our basic belief, that we're radically different from the world around us, that when I die, I'm like a sort of, like a machine in a box. The box carries on exactly as it was, and the machine just breaks down. Yeah? And that's what our assumption. So then meditation just becomes about adjusting to that assumption. Why don't I try and do that in a kind of nice, sweet, kind of Buddhist-y, kind of calm way, rather than a neurotic, antagonistic, which would be good. It's not a bad step. It's a reasonable first step. But Buddhism is saying that we're in a universe that's protected. Yeah? I'm still trying to understand that. I've been practicing Buddhism for nearly 40 years, something like that, I can't remember now, but a long time. What does it mean to be living in a universe that's protected by the Buddha, the powerful protectors of... usually an epithet for the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the Buddha figure here. It seems to be saying that consciousness is protected, that your consciousness, my consciousness, isn't just an epiphenomena of the brain, which will be snuffed out at the moment of your death and will never exist again, but the consciousness... You know, consciousness is everything. That the world is based on consciousness, and even that material is a kind of resistance to that. I'm not very good at metaphysics, but what it's assuming is your mind is it. And that consciousness is part of something much infinitely larger, which you can let go into. Which you experience as being protected by. Yeah? Now remember, Buddhism doesn't believe in any kind of god or any kind of deity, literal deity. It can sometimes look like it does, but that's because it's to do with historical reasons. It doesn't believe in any kind of literal deity that's kind of floating around somewhere. But it says that the universe is protected, that consciousness can open out into a greater consciousness, except for that greater consciousness goes beyond my consciousness, it goes beyond your consciousness, it goes beyond a collective consciousness. Now, to the degree I've experienced that, it's impossible to talk about that kind of consciousness. It's, you experience it as being utterly intimate. It's like discovering who you really are. In the Zen tradition, they talk about seeing your face before you were born. It's like discovering who you really are. And at the same time, that who you really are is boundless and boundarylessness. Yeah? It has no edge to it. Consciousness keeps unfolding. It feels, on one hand, exactly what you'd meant by being you, in some weirdly profound way, and it feels like it's universal and not yours at all. Now, we, in our ordinary human language, we sometimes say, hang on, which one is it? Is it me or not? Buddhism would say, don't forget that. That's just like the wrong question. Because we've created a me or not. Here's me. Everything else is not me. As soon as I leave the confines of my body, everything else is not me, which is an idea, it's a belief, it's not true, but that's what we've created. So we're terrified of losing this one bit that is me. Yeah? Buddhism would just say, well, it's just not like that. And then you say, well, what is it like? And then you say, well, you have to start meditating, you have to start to change your mind, and so on. Yeah. So what I'm trying to get across is this vital matter of context. I'm not sure I've got... Did you get anything from it? I don't know where I've got it across yet. I have these ideas in my head and I start to talk about them and I have that horrible feeling like, I don't know what I'm talking about here. One of the reasons why that is because anything that's to do with context, by definition, you don't focus on. And we modern people are so assume now that the valuable things are things that you put in the centre and focus on. It's become such a view that we don't realise the impact on that. And if you're not careful, Buddhism actually makes that sort of worse, weirdly. So often a metaphor, it helps a bit. I was thinking, you know, of a happy family, for instance, which is, if you can have one, and if you've come from one, you're very lucky, and if you can create one, that's a very good thing. It can be fairly rare, but when you see a happy family, you see two parents who can get on with each other, who aren't always on each other's case, who can let each other be who they are. And they usually like each other and can cooperate with each other. And then the children feel safe and loved. Yeah. Now, when children feel safe and loved, they don't go around saying, I feel so safe and loved. Oh my God, I'm so safe. This is like a safe space, you know, I'm so loved, oh my God, they've so loved me. You know, so that, they only do that in American movies, don't they? I love you, Anna, you know, remember when you were just a child, I used to love you, anyway, they don't do that. When children feel safe and loved, they trash the joint, yeah? they just go, right then, you know, they want to live, that's the whole point, you know, they have fun, they enjoy themselves, they play. Sangha, a good friend of mine, as I've often told, he sometimes brings his two sons up to the community, and they literally just go through the community trashing the joint. They can do more damage in a few minutes than anybody else can. You know. But it's because they feel safe and loved. Yeah? When you feel loved, it's like it frees you to get on with life. When you feel that that's there, and you don't even notice it's there. You know what toddlers are like? You know how they try and get out of your arms and just sort of throw themselves around. It doesn't occur to them, that's weird. Every time that happens, I never actually fall on the ground. That must be because I'm safe and loved. You know, the parent will just naturally sort of, you're always doing that stuff, yeah. So do you see how to feel happy and relaxed, and we might even talk about this at another level at some point, but to feel that happy and relaxed, you need to have this context, human context, which actually is much more difficult to create than you can think, but this human context of being safe and loved. Yeah, I mean, you're not safe in this modern silly sense because life is never safe, but you basically feel loved. And what that does, it means you can relax, it means you can play, and it means you can explore. It doesn't mean that you then clutch onto your mother. Children that do that don't feel safe and don't feel loved. Yeah? Insecure, nervous children are insecure and nervous because they don't feel those things. Even if they're very sort of clingy, it's because they don't feel that very securely. Yeah? One of the things that I've been teaching more in meditation is many people need to reimagine that situation, because many of us, myself included, up to an extent, haven't had it. So to feel like life keeps opening up, that you can play, explore, that you can take risks, which is absolutely crucial for human life. If you don't take risks, you won't grow. To be able to do that, to be able to explore, take risks, test your limits, and see whether you could actually do more than you think, you need to feel that there's somehow this background sense of being loved. Yeah. And what many of us need to do in meditation, I think, personally at the moment, I might change my mind next week, is you need to sort of imaginatively recreate that, even imagine that that's true, even if that wasn't true or not entirely true. It certainly wasn't entirely true for me. It wasn't my parents' fault. It wasn't anybody's fault. But I didn't feel that so much. And so I grew up feeling anxious, timid, quick to feel pain and so on. Not very adventurous. Yeah. In fact, looking back on my life from the age of 63, the thing I most regret is a feeling of timidity in my life and not being adventurous enough, not being brave enough. Now, that's not my parents' fault or my brother's fault. But if you haven't had that, you need to reimagine a new context for yourself. It's not simply a question of loving yourself, which often doesn't work. And it's not a question of trying to get people to love you, because that doesn't work either. When you feel loved, you actually hardly notice it. You don't focus on it, because it's a background thing. Do you see what I mean? Children, when they're loved, they just run around and have a great time. They're also aware that if someone falls over and starts crying, they've got someone to go to. But they don't think about that. Yeah. So when we try and think who loved us, if you're not careful, you end up with no one, because it's all in the background. And then if you bring it into the foreground, they're often, it's not there, or it feels like it's not there. Many of the things that are most important to us are to do with the background, are to do with the context. That's true at a level of so-called psychology, which is increasingly a word I don't like because it has problems in it. Anyway, so at the ordinary human level, you need that. But it's all the way up to the metaphysical level, yeah? It's the important things are context. What you do in the context really is completely formed by the context. Yeah? So a happy child will explore, test their limits, like rough play, like fear, all those sorts of things, want to grow, want to have adventures, because that context is there. Yeah. That truth on that lower level is true at every level. And what I'm trying to do on these few weeks is try to get us to realise that we've created a context, a background that is not in our interests, which limits our growth, which causes us to feel anxious, causes us to feel hypersensitive to slight and so on, all of those things that are becoming so epidemic now. It's because our context is so brutal, like this multi-story car park. The context won't allow us to just enjoy. Let's just check. There's something happening online that's a problem. Right? Am I being broadcast across the world? I don't know. Mm. I won't do anything unless I'm broadcast across the world. That's it. I'm stopping. So, what this question of being protected by the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, which I don't really understand, because it's not that they're literally protecting you. They're not saying that when you die, you won't die. They're not saying that when you die, you go to heaven. They're not saying when you die, I don't know, lots of lovely things happen to you and nothing bad, you know. They seem to be saying that you're not in the dangerous situation that we moderns think we are. It's not a dangerous situation we think we're in. We think we're in a fatal situation where we will be literally destroyed at the end of our life, and that end of our life could be today. we're in this state of sort of existential, metaphysical unease. We have nothing we can worship, nothing that we can feel we can turn to. All we can do is worship our own desires and fears and so on, yeah? That's not anybody's fault. That's just the context that we moderns have created, you know, which is famously disastrous now. More and more people are talking in terms of a problematic or a meta-crisis in which there is a whole network of crises which to try and solve one just creates more problems in another. What we need is a wholly new imagination of our context, of our human context. I think God can't do that, frankly. I've never thought that. But I don't think that the secular, materialist, physicalist, humanist context is working for us either. We need a new sense of a transcendental, which is really what the Buddha provides. Yeah? This very day I go for my refuge to the powerful protectors whose purpose is to guard the universe. Like the context of loving parents, where children can then adventure and take risks, we need to reimagine a context that we are safe to live, rather than constantly worrying about getting what I want, not getting what I don't want, etc., etc., yeah? Which we've made into our religion, pretty much. Interestingly, you know, you're getting this sort of mirror, aren't you? Because then people want to go back to God, or then people want to just turn to a sort of scientism, which is just sort of, you know, it's not science at all. So I'll keep on coming back to this matter of context, but I hope that image gives you a sense of why context is so important. Even when you sit to meditate, you're sitting to meditate in a context. If you had a Buddhist context, a genuine one, and if it was integral, in other words, it wasn't just a bright idea, your assumption would be that I am protected. So what I want to do just now is just open up more and more to more and more mysteries and magnitudes of the universe. And that's all available to me. Yeah? That I'm not in this sort of terrible race to death, which I'll be destroyed on the impact. That consciousness is primary, not matter. Those would have been your given assumptions. You wouldn't have even known that you knew them. Just like we don't know that we know, think that we're going to, that when we die, that's the end of consciousness. Yeah. So firstly, I think we need to be clearer that we do have a metaphysical context, and that isn't helping. It's not working for us. It's absolutely clear across the board. If you look at economics, if you look at politics, if you look at religion, if you look at the arts, we need a new metaphysical context. We need something to serve, yeah, that protects us and says, you can just let go completely because there's much more to you than you. Yeah? Much, much more, infinitely more. That's what the Buddha on the shrine here represents, is infinitely more consciousness, an endlessly opening up consciousness, a boundaryless consciousness. And that's not out there somewhere. It's not really in here somewhere either. It goes beyond that distinction. Yeah. And Buddhism would assume that you have faith in that. Traditional Buddhists would have just thought, that's just you, that's how you think of life. Quite naturally, you've grown up with it. We need to then recreate that for ourselves so that we can grow. Yeah, and that takes a bit of work. And we'll keep coming back to, I can't, you know, in the time available, I can't say very much about it because I want to make sure we meditate and so on. I want to say just a bit about the start of that sentence and then we'll meditate again. And then come back next week and we'll just carry on through this sentence, which so far I've done about two words of. So I'm going to do three words now. So this very day is how it starts. This very day. Now that's absolutely crucial to a Buddhist vision of what you're doing. This very day. Yeah? So you could translate that as saying two things. It's saying now. Yeah? Now, in this moment, I go for refuge. I'll talk about what that means later. But put it very simply, in this moment, I'm going to move towards value. Let's leave it at that for now, because otherwise it gets too difficult. This very moment, now, I'm going to do what I can to move towards value. Now, this now. Yeah? Not when I'm in a better mood, not when I slept better, not when I've had a coffee, not when I'm on retreat, etc., etc. Now, yeah? I'm going to do what I can to move my consciousness or align my consciousness with value. And one of the ways, that the first thing we need to do that, is not make matters worse. Because one of the great teachings should be that you can always make matters worse. It's really easy to make matters worse and genuinely difficult to make them better. Yeah? So like, as I say, I have a lot of physical discomfort and I won't bore you with all that, it's so tedious. But what I know immediately when I sit to meditate is I can make that worse really quickly. In fact, it's not only easy to make it worse, it's very, very tempting to make it worse. Just as when you're in a bad mood, I bet you get into bad moods, because I do. I got into a bad mood yesterday afternoon, but let's not go there. just as when you're in a bad mood, the easiest thing to do is make it worse. In fact, you will be tempted to make it worse. You'll weirdly be, you can make it worse. You know? They should have these pop songs, you know. Beyonce should do one on You Can Make It. Does anyone know Beyonce? You could you can make it worse. You know, we could have a whole song over there. Songwriters, anyway, you know, that when you're in a bad mood, you sort of feel weirdly drawn to making it worse, to acting out of it, to saying things that you don't really mean to your loved one or your friends or to somebody online. You not only make it worse for yourself, usually you make it worse for other people, and they can make it worse back, and so we go on, and then we end up in global catastrophes. Yeah. So the first way to go for refuge now, this very day, is not to make it worse. If you're in a bad mood, if you're uncomfortable, if you feel put upon, if you life isn't working out for you, and you will all feel that at some point, you cannot make it worse. Yeah. Actually, not always easy to, because you're very drawn to making it worse, because it feels like that will solve it. When you're anxious, it really does feel like if I can just get everybody to do what I want, I won't be anxious anymore. And that usually makes it worse. When you're angry, you think, if I could just tell them what I think of them, it'll be like a film where you say, your trouble is this, and they go, oh God, yes, that's so right. Has that ever happened to you? You know, you say, here's your problem. They go, oh my God, I didn't know, but now you're so wise. What they usually do is say, your problem is telling me what my problem is, and so you go on, yeah? So this very day is about, now, in this moment, I'm going to not make things worse for myself. And that means not reacting to your experience, yeah? Learning to feel your experience, and this is a key principle in meditation, learning to feel your experience, you're not trying to distance yourself from it, you're not trying to ignore it or avoid it, you're trying to feel it, but you're not trying to act it out or act from it. You're just trying to learn how to be with your experience, without making it worse by reacting to it. Whether that's in a business meeting, whether that's in the tube, whether that's in your meditation. Yeah? You're trying to learn that very deep lesson of, can I just feel my experience? It's not what I want, but let's just feel it and not make it worse. Yeah? And then you're going to try and do something to try and make it better. Now that's going to be, in a way, more testing, but the first principle to learn is not to make it worse now, in this moment, yeah? And that's something that we human beings need to learn in a macro level and a micro level. Can I just feel things? I don't want to be in a bad mood. I didn't choose to be in a bad mood. I can see it's not having a good effect. Can I see if I can contain it, feel it, feel even empathy for it, and not spread it around? Not pop a comment on Facebook, which seems to be one of our ways of spread. What we've got now is a kind of global village where I can be in a bad mood, I can spread that around the world, not just around the village. When in the town I was growing up in, you could only spread it around the village. It went quite fast, but not as fast as the World Wide Web. Yeah. So the other thing I want to say about this is, so it's this very day is saying now, not when I'm in a better mood, not when I fancy meditating, not when I think I'm spiritual, not in some better world where it's not so crowded and it's not so warm, but now, in this moment, I'm going to move towards value and I'm going to move away from non-value, which is really to say I'm going to move towards the good and move away from harm. Yeah? And we try to train ourselves moment by moment in always doing that. So first of all, it means now, yeah? Secondly, it means today, quite obviously, because it says this very day. It means today. So one of the things I wanted to draw out from that is that meditation is not really about meditation, it's about today, yeah? And most of what you're doing today, most of what I'm doing today, isn't meditation. But it's saying, this very day, today, I'm going to go for my refuge. I'm going to act in with my body, with my speech, and with my mind, so as to cultivate value and meaning and life, you could say. And I'm going to try not to cultivate anti-value, anti-meaning, and apathy. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do today. That's really what today is about. Yeah, that's the Buddhist vision of life. Is that what is today is about? I found it, as I said, very helpful on this solitary retreat. I was on a retreat for a month, and you know, you get into, well, I got into, okay, I'm here tomorrow, which is Wednesday, and then I'm here the following Wednesday, and I'm here the following Wednesday. Oh my God! And I'm here the following, you know, you get into this sort of time thing. And I kept on trying to just say to myself, this very day I go for my refuge. So in other words, now, this day, okay, what? How do I move from that state of mind where I'm starting to worry about how long I'm on my own for, with nothing to do, apart from this large mountain to look at, which didn't do much, actually. So how can I just do it now, yeah? This very day? Never mind what the other thing about this, I think, is, never mind what other people are doing, which is a classic Buddhist sort of thought. Never mind what other people are doing. Never mind whether they're doing it or not. Never mind about what we think about right wing or left wing or whatever, or what we think about global warming, or what we think about the meta crisis or the problematique. This very day, I am going to, by my own choice, move towards value in everything I do. Yeah? That is the Buddhist vision. In this very day, yeah? So I can't change the issues of, I don't know, electric cars. I can't change the issue of pig oil. I can't change my friend's bad mood, even. Sometimes it feels like I can't even change my own, yeah? And probably you sometimes feel like that, that you're sort of stuck in a mind that you don't know, you didn't invent. And it's this is me talking personally, and it's a nightmare sometimes. You think, who even made this thing? It doesn't work. So on the basis of that, you think, okay, well, this very day, I go from it. I try to, in ways, you know, try to cultivate value, meaning, goodness, and try to go away from non-value, non-meaning, harm. Yeah. And Buddhism is saying that is your responsibility. Today, tomorrow, the next day, yeah, is this very day, I go for my refuge. I go for my refuge, not I join a club, not I vote for something, not I give my opinion, but I go for refuge. Yeah? I move myself, irrespective of whether other people are doing that, in the direction of the good, to use that classic phrase. You know? And when you do that, even if you can do it only a tiny bit, the world does actually change. Like when you are in a difficult meeting and you remember this very day I go for my refuge, and you remember to not react and just say, oh, just tell me what you were saying again. I didn't quite get it. I'm feeling a bit about it. I'm sorry, I haven't got you, you know. When you do that, in the moment you do that, the world changes. Like, I remember not long ago, I was coming downstairs and Amelie Odin was coming up and he told me off for something I'd said, quite rightly. And I said, oh, I don't remember saying that, but it sounds just like me. I've got such a big mouth. I have, you know. I was born with a big mouth. It's good. Anyway, but just by saying, oh, yeah, no, I don't, yeah, that does sound like me. That was my fault. I'm really sorry about that. In that moment on the stairwell, you can feel the world change a bit. Really, you can. When we talk about changing the world, we're always imagining this place somewhere else. It's never here, is it? It's never me, it's never you. Changing the world is always ages away, you know. But actually, if you walk down the stairwell and say, yeah, sorry about that, that was my fault, I shouldn't have done that, that's so like me, but not then getting onto your own case about it, but et cetera, then the world changes. if you, in the moment, decide to be generous, then the world changes immediately. You change the world. And you're doing that in meditation, and then you're saying, this very day, I'm going to do that in the whole of my life, so that tomorrow morning when I come to meditate, I'm already doing that. I'm already acting on this very day I go for my refuge, I'm moving towards value. So all I need to do is do that in a little bit more subtlety in the meditation. I need to work with my mind a little bit more subtly, but I've been doing that all the time. That's the classic Buddhist vision, is that you're always trying to do that, and then in meditation you just refine it a bit. Yeah. So this very day I go for my refuge to the powerful protectors, whose purpose is to guard the universe. So I said something about the context, I'll come back to that next week, and said something about this very day. Next week I might try and say something more about go for refuge, because there's a lot to say about that. But let's just try and do that now, this very day, now. Let's see if we can sit in meditation, feel our experience, not make it worse, and see if we can move it towards value.